And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello. Hello. Today is Wednesday, March 8th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts. Send us thoughts. Send us questions. Send us some picks for March Madness coming up, baby. Send them to us. The madness is in full effect. We got conference tournaments going on. Selection show is in less than 4 days. College basketball is on fire. Cinderella's being made. Buzzer beaters galore. Teams are everywhere right now. The NHL, the NBA is starting to stretch run to the playoffs. Spring training has started for baseball. We got NFL news. March is a crazy time. Let's get it going with some college basketball. Darren, let's start it off.
Listen, there's so much to talk about with this, and we're going to start with a little bit of stuff that happened over the weekend, then we're going to get into the conference tournaments. But there's been – the one thing I love about March Madness, and you know, Kevin has been a proponent of this for a long time, championship week is just about as exciting as the first round of the tournament. I agree in a lot of ways because every game's a game seven, you know, especially for the small conferences. When they lose, it's over. You know, there might be the ones that are one seeds that get knocked out and they get the automatic NIT bid. But basically, that's about it. Nobody has the dream. And now that the NIT isn't at the Garden anymore, nobody really cares about playing in Las Vegas. Let's be honest. New York is a regional round this year. The NIT's in Vegas. Nobody cares about playing in Vegas. I think I stunned Kev with that. Sorry, Kev.
But I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did it this year. It's not even where these kids get to follow the dream of getting to play in the Garden. You know, and I know we're New Yorkers, but every kid dreams about playing in the damn Garden. It's not just New Yorkers that do. Just a couple of things over the weekend, just in big games. Texas A&M outlasted Bama. Bama was the number one seed overall. They fall from that right now. Unless Houston loses in the tournament, I think Houston, even Kansas, if they win their league because it's so tough, will catapult Alabama as the number one overall seed. Iowa State was left for dead. All of a sudden, they go to Baylor and beat the crap out of them. No one saw that happening in Waco. Seton Hall crushes Providence. Then they come back tonight and lose to DePaul in the worst way you could possibly imagine. They blow a lead. They blow a five-point lead down the stretch. They give up a four-point lead with less than 7 seconds to go. They give up a layup. Then they turn the ball over. Then they foul the three-point shooter. Guy hits all three foul shots. They race down the court. They go for the layup. The ref calls goaltending. And then they overrule the call after looking at the – because it was not goaltending. They got it right. But the ball is crazy. The ball escapes. The amount of emotion that happened in the last 8 seconds of that game was mind-numbing. I'm just saying. Michigan State gets the much-needed win against Ohio State. West Virginia gets by K-State. I think that helped clinch it. Then they won against Texas Tech tonight, and that put it over the top, I believe. Auburn got by Tennessee. They needed a must-win. Marquette survived against St. John's. Not that it's a big deal, but St. John's had a chance to tie it up with 2 seconds left, and Omar Stanley missed the foul shot. So they were down one. They ended up losing by two. Kentucky knocked off Arkansas. People have Arkansas safely in. I'm going to tell you why Mississippi State's better, but I'll do that later. Kentucky knocked off Arkansas. I'm sorry. Oklahoma beat up TCU. Missouri got by Ole Miss. These are all wins that helped them get in. Texas beat Kansas, guaranteed them a two seed, I believe. Oregon holds off Stanford, keeps their dream alive. Nevada falls at home to UNLV. All of a sudden, Nevada's a team that's last four in for me. They could be out. And they have a tough one tomorrow. So we don't know what's going to happen with that team. Oklahoma State survives against Texas Tech. But I got news for you. They lose tonight to Oklahoma. I think their dream is over. Miami outlasts Pitt. Duke gets by North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Carolina wins tonight. But they're going to have to do more than that. They're going to have to beat Virginia and probably win even another game on top of that. Florida Atlantic gets by La Tech in a game closer than we would have liked because we all like Florida Atlantic to get in. UConn won at Nova. Remember that little dream scenario I gave you for Nova? That didn't happen. Yale beat Brown and Cornell handled Columbia. So Cornell gets into the playoff. Brown does not. Just one of those things. Clemson routed Notre Dame, but they'll need more than that. Vandy holds off Mississippi State. Now Mississippi State has to beat Florida, I think, to get in. Utah State beat up Boise State. They still need probably another win to get in. UCLA beats Arizona. They might get a one seed. USC holds off Arizona State. Arizona State's on the outside looking in. And then that was Saturday, okay? Then Sunday, Houston squeaks by Memphis. He pushed off. I don't know how everybody doesn't see this. Great shot. He pushed him off. It was like watching Jordan against Byron Russell in game 6 against Utah. He shoved him, hit the shot. Listen, I'm fine, whatever. But Memphis deserved a little bit better. San Francisco ended that Santa Clara dream I had in double overtime. Penn State won at the buzzer and a putback by the shortest guy on the court. Now they keep their dream alive, and they have to win their next game in order to stay in.
Purdue escaped, and that game hurt Maryland.
It did. I think they're still in, but it definitely hurt them. Maryland can't win on the road. They've done great at home. Only loss was to UCLA, but on the road they've been awful. Nebraska beat Iowa. I think they saved themselves with that 13-point run when they were down against Michigan State. But, wow, Northwestern handled the Rutgers easily at the rack to the point where now Rutgers, who I had in, if they don't beat Michigan, the loser of that game is in trouble. They're out, I think. And Wisconsin escaped Minnesota, but they lost tonight to Ohio State. They lost to the 13 seed with a 13-18 record. They are done. And that's just the big stuff, right? Then we get to the small stuff. Yes, G, go ahead.
Well, so the games you just ran through,
yep.
The big losers from last weekend, and you mentioned them, but just to review them, TCU, that was a bad loss, okay?
It is, but it isn't. It's a road loss in that conference. It's not. They're still going to be a 5 or a 6 seed, G. I don't think it's that bad.
Providence had a bad loss against Seton Hall.
Got blown out.
The Nevada loss against UNLV was bad.
Excruciating.
Maryland losing to Penn State was a bad loss. I'm just telling you the bad losses. Mississippi State losing to Vanderbilt was a bad loss. And you said it, the Rutgers loss against Northwestern was bad. It puts them in a very precarious situation going into tomorrow. So,
well, here's the thing. This is what I have down, okay, as the games that you have to watch for this week. Okay, Rutgers versus Michigan. The loser's definitely out. If Michigan wins, I think they have to win one more. If Rutgers wins, I think they're in. That's my take. Wisconsin lost to Ohio State. I think we could write them out. Penn State, if they lose to Illinois, I think they're done. I have them in right now. Oklahoma State beat. They have to beat Oklahoma to get in, I think. They have a shot to get in. If they lose to Oklahoma, I think they're done. You think they need two?
They might need two more.
Oregon, they're going to have to beat Washington State tomorrow to even have a shot. They probably have to win two. UCLA will have to be the second game. Mississippi State will have to beat Florida. Arkansas, to me, has to beat Auburn. I don't think they're a lock. And it surprises me how easily everybody likes them because their net is so high. Mississippi State has a better resume. I'm stunned by the fact that nobody sees it. But that, I'll go through it with you guys in a second. Utah State has to beat not only beat New Mexico, but they might have to beat Boise as well.
I've got Utah State and Boise State both in.
I have them both in too, but I have Utah State as a last four.
Over ahead of Boise State? Is Boise State
No. I think Boise State's in regardless. I think Utah State has to win at least one and maybe two.
Okay. What about Nevada?
I think Nevada has to win against San Jose State or they're out.
All right, so Mountain West, if you're ranking them, San Diego State in, Boise State in, Utah State, where do you think?
I have them in right now, and I have both in right now, but with a loss, both of them can fall out to me.
Okay.
I don't know what you think, Kev.
I've got Utah State in. Nevada's in my last four.
Okay. So you actually have Utah State above Nevada.
A little safer. Yeah,
Nevada loss was brutal. It was.
A little bit.
It was at home.
Yeah. It was a bad loss. There's no way around it.
Clemson also has to find a way to win.
They do.
They're gonna need a good one here tomorrow.
Now, does Clemson get hurt a little bit by having that double bye, and they don't get that
easy cheesy win? I think they had enough cheesy wins. I think that doesn't do as much for them. But it never hurts to add an extra win to the resume though.
You got 22. You know, make it 23 with an easy win.
No, you're right.
Yeah, but if they would have come out and beat Syracuse today, just for argument's sake, who lost to Wake earlier today, if they were the ones that would have won that, you'd still be in a position where you're saying, well, they beat Syracuse. We got to see another win out of them before we're going to be, you know, take anything they're doing, you know, as real. So I'm not sure that matters, but I get your point, though.
I think they get NC State next, if I'm not mistaken, right? Or they get the NC State winner?
I think they get the Virginia Tech NC State winner.
Yeah, I think they get the winner of that game tonight. I assume NC State, but Vatek could easily win the game.
Where do you have NC State?
I haven't been.
I haven't been to Clemson right now.
I haven't been to Clemson too. It's one of those things where the ACC, I only have five in. And I have Clemson on the outside looking in because of, again, 332 was their out-of-conference schedule. And there's only 360 teams. I mean, you really can't schedule that poorly and expect the committee to like you. And they have Pitt, two losses to quad fours.
Pitt and NC State both in? Those are your fourth and fifth?
I think Pitt's in, but, you know, I think they'd be safe if they won one more. But I think they're definitely – I think they're in. They have some bad losses early.
How many does NC have to win?
I think they have to win three. They won one already, so I think they have to win two more.
They have to win at least two more. They have to beat Virginia, and they're going to have to get a win after that, whoever it's against.
It's either Clemson or it's NC State or it's Vatek. And they better hope for their sake it's not Vatek, because Vatek isn't going to give them any points.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The one good thing for all these teams, Oral Roberts took care of business. Charleston took care of business. I would have put Charleston in had they lost, because there's a 30-win team. 30-4, I would have put them in. G?
Yep.
So going right to Charleston in the Colonial, there's another bad loss we didn't even get to yet, but Hofstra, that was a bad loss by Hofstra.
Well, it was a great tournament, and I'm going to get into that in a second when we get to the small ones.
Go ahead.
I have a hard time calling these losses horrible when these teams play a one-off game. You know, they lost. I mean, you know, the other team shot better that night. It's not like these teams have uber talent. You know, these are teams that play, they play mid-level talent, and they're going to have more off nights sometimes than the good schools do. But we'll get into the small conferences real quick right now. Before I do, though, I just want to mention one thing. Last Friday night, there I am living the dream, watching, you know, Kent State take on Akron. That's what I do, because I like Mac regular season basketball like anybody does. Not your Mac, Kev, the other Mac, Mid-American.
Yep.
So, game's nip and tuck. Good game, actually. Kent State up three. Akron goes down, gets the shot off. Blow the whistle, call a foul with a second to go. Only problem was, he was never touched. They show the replay. Nobody even laid a finger on this kid. They call the foul by just pretty much predicting that he was going to foul him. He did a swipe from about 5 feet away. No, in no way was he anywhere near the shooter. They blew the whistle. The kid hit all three foul shots. Game went to overtime. And, Kent was able to pull it out in overtime. But I mean, sometimes officiating is like, you know, I know you want to anticipate a foul call, but my God, I don't think I've ever seen anything so dramatically wrong in my life. We've seen it where, oh, do you really have to call that foul? And we'll talk about that game in a minute. We've seen it where, I know there was contact, but whatever. He didn't touch the guy. He wasn't anywhere near the guy. On a three-point shot, they blew the whistle. You're like, oh my God, how does this guy keep his job? Just one of those things. Anyway, we get to the small conferences. Interesting, Sun Belt. The number one seed, Southern Miss, gets blown out by USA. South Alabama crushed them. South Alabama got all the way to the final, to be honest with you. They made a really good run. They fell short to the Raging Cajuns, which we all like the nickname, so we're happy that they're there. And Louisiana goes to the tournament, so that was pretty cool. But, the blowout was kind of surprising. The game was great, though. Again, another great final. South Alabama and Louisiana was excellent, I thought. The Northeast Conference. Can we get away from this freaking rule now where you have to play 4 years before you get to the tournament? Now, Merrimack won the conference tournament by a point over FDU. FDU goes because Merrimack can't. But it's just so silly. I mean, come on. You have to play 4 years before you can qualify for the tournament? Then don't let them play in the conference tournament. Now you're wasting everybody's time. We're sitting there watching the ESPN2 game yesterday, and it's like, what the heck are we watching? I don't know, my take. I don't know if you guys agree.
It's a scrimmage for FDU.
And yeah, they were up. They actually gave the game away late, but that was ridiculous. The OVC was epic, okay? SEMO State, you know, they lead by 7 with 102 to go. Tennessee Tech fights back, hitting threes and twos, turnover here and there, missing a couple of missed foul shots. SEMO State has a 2-point lead with 2.8 seconds to go. Tennessee Tech throws the ball down the court off the timeout. Kid catches it, turns around, buries a three. They call it the game winner. Only problem on the replay was, yes, the shot was taken on time. His foot was on the line when he caught the ball, and he never established possession outside of the three-point arc. So it ended up becoming a two. And I think Tennessee Tech was just gassed at that point. SEMO pulled away in the overtime. But I've never seen that happen before where a guy caught it within the two, hit the shot as a three, but they didn't count it to end the game. That's the kind of magic that you only see in March. Amazing game. SEMO State, who was the 5 seed coming into this tournament, actually had a higher net, Kev, than did Tennessee Tech, who was the 2 seed. But not that it mattered. They were both in the 200s.
They're still the almost 250.
They were in the 240s, I think, and the other one was 270. But, you know, the thing is that SEMO now gets to play in the playing game. So congratulations to them.
Against Fairleigh Dickinson, probably.
Fairleigh Ridiculous. Absolutely. Asheville was down 14 with a little over 5 to play. And then Jones went crazy, hit a few threes, and Asheville escaped, and they beat the Campbell Camels by 4. Another great game. Drew Pember on this team, a legit big who played at Tennessee. He's the kind of guy that will not be intimidated by playing against those bigger schools. Drake just routed Bradley.
Yeah.
I've been talking about Drake for a couple of weeks. I like Drake, and I had him on my bubble a little bit, and we both said that Drake could get in maybe as an at-large, but not Bradley. Drake's good, and they showed it. They look great. That game was never a game. Kennesaw State was the foul call that we all hated. We were texting each other. Game was tied at 60, what was it, 66, I think. They call a foul with 0.7 seconds to go. Did he foul him? Probably. Do you have to call it there? No.
Oh.
It wasn't a hack. It wasn't like any kind of blatant thing. It was like a home court advantage. Again, the tiebreaker where you play at the home, the gym of the home team, when they only played once because of the conference schedule and it was a Kennesaw State home game. It was tough for Liberty as it was. It was an amazing game, though. I mean, these are two teams that are fun. They play up and down. Liberty was taking a lot of quick shots and all that stuff. But that was the foul call. I didn't love it. Liberty tied it with a three from this kid Porter with 22 seconds left, who's a freshman, just came out there, drilled a three, and you're like, oh, this game's going to overtime. And then they got the foul call. They hit the first, and like I yelled about last week, missed the second. They're 0.7 seconds. By the time they catch the ball, they can't shoot it. But you know, not everybody listens to me, and that's
just I don't know why.
I don't know why either. Patriot League final tonight was a blowout for Colgate, but the semifinal between Lafayette and American was epic as well. That game was all over the place.
The 6-7 matchup?
Oh, my God. But they were down 24 in the first half. They stormed back. Game goes to 2 overtimes. This kid that looks like he's 11, this kid O'Brien or whatever his name is, burying these threes, this little fair-skinned Irish kid burying threes, and they keep sending it to overtime, and they eventually pull it out and win. But that's what made it so great is that Lafayette got a chance to play on the big stage tonight. They did not play well against Colgate, but as I said, when they won, they have a right to get blown out by Colgate, and they did.
So my son, so I'm watching the end of the game. My son comes into the room like, "Why are you watching this game?" I said, "It's Colgate. You know, they have a chance to win the Patriot." And he says, "What does it matter?" I go, "Well, you think back just a few years ago, Bucknell beat Kansas,
exactly,
and Lehigh beat Duke, and then they start putting up the things going." Bucknell's win over Kansas was like 2005 or 2006. And they go, what?
You're old.
and Lehigh beating Duke as a 15 over 2 was back in 2011, 2012. It's like, geez, that's over 10 years ago.
It is nuts how old we are now.
It is.
How many games that we've seen. Coppin State. You know, Gino remembers that one. Anyway, yep. I always like pointing that one out for you, handsome. Then we had just a couple other ones. Northern Arizona's in the final tonight. The team was like 9-22 going into the Big Sky. They're playing Montana State tonight for a right to get in. Furman blew a big lead, then they had a fight back against West Carolina to get into the final. And then they had, again, Chattanooga gave them a great fight, but Furman was the best team in that league, and they go get advanced. We talked about the Colonial a little bit earlier. I mean, Gino said it. I mean, listen, tough loss for Hofstra. It's a game they have to win in the 4-1 matchup. They do. I agree with you. Well, Wilmington and Charleston both survive against Towson and Hofstra, right? I mean, two great semifinals. And the final was equally great. I mean, you know, Charleston starts pulling away. You know, Wilmington fights back. I mean, this is a fun league to watch. This is one of those leagues where you sit there and watch Charleston. I didn't realize how good the depth was, to be honest, until I started watching this. They have 9-10 guys going out there, each getting, you know, somewhere around 18 to 25 minutes. And everybody can shoot and everybody can pass. And it's an interesting team. It's a team to watch in the tournament. And then the West Coast Conference, we thought we were going to get a really good Gonzaga-St. Mary's game. We did not.
Wow.
We were hoping the Summit would be good. It was not. Oral Roberts disposed of North Dakota State like they didn't belong there. The Horizon was a good final. The 4-3. Northern Kentucky beat Cleveland State. I mean, the Norse. They find a way to get in. Darren Horn, who's been coaching all over the place, does a great job. And, and that's basically the small conferences. One little note, though, North Texas, in a regular season game last weekend, held Western Kentucky to 33 points. 67-33. Hard to do. That was the final. They doubled them up without, by scoring 67 points. I just thought that was interesting. And, there's lots of win of go-home games to go. So a lot of things to watch for. Boys, comments on college basketball.
You mentioned North Texas. Any chance that they reach the finals and lose a tough one to Florida Atlantic?
See, I would say yes, but it's going to depend on how these bubble teams do.
Yep.
If the big school bubble teams – no, I'm serious, Gino, and I know you're shaking your head. But let's say Oklahoma State loses tonight. Let's say Mississippi State loses. Let's say Utah State loses. Let's say they all lose in their first game. Let's say Penn State loses. Do other teams get a chance to rise up? Say Washington State knocks off Oregon. All things that could happen. I mean, these are not great teams here. Rutgers loses to Michigan. You know, and I mean, it would take a lot. It would take a ton, in my opinion.
It takes a lot. But, you know, I think you and I are in the same boat of saying we'd rather see the second-place team in some of the mid-majors get a chance rather than the eighth or ninth-place team in the big boys.
I agree.
That's what makes March Madness is little guys.
Then it makes it more fun.
Then you know what, Kev? Let's change the rules on how they're getting teams in. Because under the current way they're getting the teams in with these quad one and quad two and quad three and quad four games, Charleston and Hofstra and Florida Atlantic are never going to play enough quad one games to be better than in any of the rankings against any of these big conferences. They're just not. You take bad teams in the big conferences and they still have 5 and 6 quad one and quad two wins that these other teams like Florida Atlantic just don't have.
They get a chance because they're in the conference. I know it's a circular argument, but the other thing is, you know, you take a Florida Atlantic, great year this year. Next year, they want to play the big boys, and the big boys say, well, our schedule is already set for next year, pretty much. So you're looking at 2024. Well, there's no guarantee for the big boys that Florida Atlantic is going to be the same team in 2 years. So they're going to sit there and say, we'll pass on you for now. So it's very hard for the little guy to always get a chance. You know, you feel like these really good schools and these smaller conferences come along, they have like that 3-year stretch where they can be a little dominant in their conference and then they fall back and somebody else cycles through. It seems like it's always constantly cycling through. And the big boys don't want to have a chance of saying, okay, this team's good now. In 2 years, they may be, you know, 250 in the net and does nothing for us.
I agree.
It's a vicious cycle, and I don't know what the right answer is.
I completely agree. Darren?
Well, here's the thing. Because what happens is, and your point is well made, Kev, the other part we're not talking about is the fact that the coach most likely leaves. The reason why Gonzaga was able to become Gonzaga was because few stayed.
Yep.
Because few had offers all over the place. But if you can keep the coach, even Wichita State before Marshall got into trouble, was becoming that type of team in the Midwest. It was becoming that type of team because he was passing up on those other jobs. You need the coach to stay and build the culture. But most of these coaches, You know, how many of these guys really want to stay when they're making 150 grand when they get an offer for 7 million to change their family around? It's really hard to ask him to do so. So now we don't know if Florida Atlantic not only has a good year this year, but we don't know if Coach stays. Next year, we don't know.
Look at last year's biggest Cinderella, St. Peter's.
Yep. It goes right there.
Right, and gets a job in Seton Hall.
And the team that lost in the first round, that was a lot of fun, San Francisco, Golden gets a job over at Florida. Right? So you're like, you know, listen, these guys are building something up for themselves and their families, and you can't really blame them.
No.
But at the same time, that's why it's so hard to sustain, because then you bring in a new coach, and that new coach, like Gonzaga started with Munson, right? Yeah. Dan Munson. It did not start with Few, but Munson moved on to Minnesota after they made their coaching change with Haskins, and all of a sudden, you know, Few came in, and he maintained it, and then all of a sudden not refused, but turned down every major offer. He got offers from Arizona, and he turned it down. I mean, those are big offers, and that's what happens, unfortunately. And I left one game out on purpose because I wanted to discuss this at the end to tell you why the tournament is great the way it is. Please don't add teams. Please don't change around a lot of things, because the fact is that Indiana and Michigan had us all glued on Sunday afternoon. If there was 92 teams or 96 teams or 80 teams, we don't even care about this game. But instead, because of the 68, and because even though some of these teams aren't special, you know, but they still have the fighting resumes to get into a tournament that these kids all want to play in, we were glued to a regular season finale between a team fighting for its life against a team fighting for seeding. And it was awesome. It was a great game. It was hard to pull away from it. And there was three games on in overtime at the same time. Now, Gino had the 8 screens up at once, but me and Kev, we don't have that luxury. So we're sitting there going the best we can. I have 2 at least. Kev's only got 1. We're trying to keep up with phones and this and that and everything like that. But you had 3 games. You had the Patriots semifinal. You know, you had the SEMO game. You had, I mean, there was everything going on at once. It was nuts. And it was crazy. 1, right, Kev?
I've got 1, and we were celebrating my mother-in-law's 80th birthday.
Not an easy time.
And, you know, my nephew's over, my son's over, and they're more interested in watching Lakers Warriors.
Of course they are, because they're children. We loved the NBA when we were kids too.
3:30 on Sunday afternoon. Who cares if you miss a tip off? I won't watch this game.
And it was funny, but we were all. I mean, that was what the tournament's all about, and that was before the tournament. That was 2 big schools playing against each other. 1 team fighting for its life, basically. Because now, I mean, Michigan's not dead yet, but they have to win at least 2. One of them's going to have to be against Purdue. So, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, and that's why the sport is special for those that really take the time to kind of embrace it. I know it's a lot of games. I know there's a lot of stuff that goes on. I know it's overwhelming. I know all the stuff everybody says. But if you just want to watch a bunch of game sevens and teams fighting for their lives and kids putting everything on the court, there is nothing better than watching last week. I mean, the end of last week till next weekend. That's when we get to see all the upsets and all the magic.
We've watched basketball. We watch it consistently. And then about 3 weeks from now, Doris from accounting is going to win the tournament.
2 years ago, my daughter Megan won. And why? Because her favorite YouTuber went to Baylor, and the UCLA gymnastics girl had a perfect 10. So those are the 2 schools she picked in the Final 4. That's why she won. It doesn't take much. G?
All right. So we got a lot of conferences with only 1 bid. We're not going to go through the conferences with 1 bid. We're assuming the A-10 is only getting 1 bid. We got 2 conferences where I think we all think there's 2 bids. It's Gonzaga St. Mary's in the West Coast. It's Houston and Memphis in the American Athletic.
Correct.
For the moment, we're assuming those are set and done. We're going to go through the others pretty quickly. We're going to do a little rapid fire, but we'll go through them real quick. See if any of us have any differences or changes. ACC, 5 teams. Virginia, Miami, Duke, Pittsburgh, North Carolina State. Clemson, North Carolina need to do other things to get in. Agreed?
Agreed. Yeah.
Okay. Big East. At the moment, I have 5. Marquette, Xavier, UConn, Providence, Creighton, At the moment, I have nobody with a chance unless Nova runs the table and wins a great game in the final. That's the only chance they have.
Yeah, every team has to win the final. There's no bubble team in this conference.
Nope. I think all five are pretty safely. Yeah,
Providence plays to Connecticut. If they lose to Connecticut in the first round, unless they lose by 60, I don't think there's even a question.
Yep. Okay. Big Ten. Here we go. Purdue, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan State, Iowa. I have in solidly. That's five.
Yep.
And then I have bubbles at the moment. Maryland, Rutgers, Northwestern. At the moment, I have Penn State out. I have Michigan out. Wisconsin, for me now, is done. Darren, start us.
I have Penn State in.
I know you do.
I have Penn State in. I like the way that team played. I like the way they played down the stretch. I thought that win against Maryland was huge. Here's the thing, though. They lose to Illinois, they're out. Unless everybody else loses, they will be on the wrong side of the bubble, in my opinion. But right now, I have them as one of my last four. I have two teams from that conference in my last four. I have Rutgers in my last four and Penn State in my last four. Those two teams are my last four in. I don't have a team in that. I had Wisconsin in as a first four out until tonight, and now they're not even in that argument. Now that team becomes Oregon as one of my first four outs.
So I had Northwestern last week right on the bubble. The win against Rutgers to me put them in now.
I had them solid. I had them like a seven. I had them pretty high up.
Yeah. Okay. I now have them in. Rutgers is to me the team that's really close to being bubble, depending on what happens with Penn State, what happens with Michigan for me. Kev?
I've got Northwestern more as a nine. I've got Maryland pretty solidly in.
Okay.
And as of right now, I've got Rutgers in my last four.
What about Penn State?
I have them first four out.
Okay. Okay, Big 12, Kansas, Baylor, Texas, Iowa State, Kansas State, five definitely in. I now have West Virginia in pretty solidly. That's six. The others right there, I have TCU in at the moment. I have Oklahoma State and Texas Tech out at the moment. Kevin?
I have TCU more solidly in, and I've got West Virginia just in, and the win today, I think, pretty much clinched therein.
Yeah, for me, TCU is like a six seed. I have them not even close. Oklahoma State will have to win at least one, if not two games to get in. West Virginia, I think, clinched today. I had them in already. I had them in, not in my last four in either. But if they would have lost to Texas Tech, it would have been a little bit more exciting.
Is Texas Tech now out in your book?
They're 16-16. Definitely. Yeah, they're a 500 team. I don't think you can put them in.
I agree. I don't have them in. I want to know what the consensus between the three of us is.
They also had a coaching issue. The coach did a Bible verse that offended. He talked about slavery, got suspended, Mark Adams. So I don't know. I mean, the team got blown out tonight. I don't know if they just weren't into it, but Texas Tech was out before that, I thought, and this pretty much cemented it, put a nail in the coffin, so to speak.
Okay, Pac-12, UCLA, Arizona, USC in. At the moment, I have Oregon in. Darren?
For me, Arizona State's closer than Oregon. I have them as my first team out. I have the other three in. Arizona State's my first team out. They're going to have to win in order to get to do something in this tournament here.
Kev?
I have the three, UCLA, Arizona, USC. Arizona State is like my last team in, and Oregon's on the outside. They need a couple of wins.
Okay. Mountain West, San Diego State in, Boise State. And then I have Utah State and Nevada both in at the moment. To me, Nevada is one of my last four in at the moment. Kev, we'll start.
I've got the three. I've got Nevada on the outside.
Okay. Darren?
I have all four in like you, but two of those four are my last four. Utah State is my third to last, and Nevada is my exact last team. I have Nevada on the one side of the bubble and Arizona State on the other. Those are my two teams. That's 68 and 69 for me right now.
Okay, and the SEC. Alabama, Texas A&M, Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee, Auburn, Arkansas, I have a seven in. To me, Mississippi State is right on the cusp. I have them in at the moment. I have Florida and Vanderbilt out. Darren, start with you this time.
Yeah, I have the eight in just like you do. I have Vanderbilt as my next team. That's for that conference that would have a shot of getting in. They'll have to win a couple games though. They have to win at least two in order to advance. And just to make my little stupid argument on this, Mississippi State versus Arkansas. Everybody has Arkansas solid, Mississippi State not. First of all, they played each other once in Arkansas. Mississippi State beat them. Second of all, you know, Arkansas has a couple of nice quality wins. I'm not trying to say that they don't. But, you know, I think they have to beat Auburn to kind of clinch their spot. Mississippi State beat Marquette. Mississippi State beat TCU. You know, these are really good wins. You know, the other way was Arkansas beat Oklahoma was one of their best wins. And I'm blanking on the other one. I'm sorry. It was a home game, too, and I can't think of who it was. It was a good team. It was San Diego State. I'm sorry. So their wins were San Diego State and Oklahoma, their best two out-of-conference wins. Well, you know, Marquette and TCU were the wins for Mississippi State. And they beat them head-to-head in the only game they played at Arkansas. I don't know how Arkansas is so steadily great. Neither team did great against the top two teams. Well, neither team beat Alabama or Tennessee. They both beat Texas A&M once. I don't see the difference, but everybody has Arkansas like a 7 seed. I don't think Arkansas has been playing like crap down the stretch. I'm surprised everybody's so high on them. Just my take. Anyway, Kev? I'll pass it off to you, Kev.
Yeah, I've got the eight teams in. Vandy needs two wins at least. Just with the way they're playing down the stretch here, they've really turned on their season here in the last 3 weeks or so. And Florida, they've got nowhere close.
Okay. All right. So here's the situation. We just ran through our grids, basically. Florida Atlantic loses by a buzzer beater in their conference final. Are you putting them in, Kev?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wait. Who are you knocking out?
Right now it's Nevada for me. Right now it's Nevada.
Wait, we'll get to you in a minute. We'll get to you in a minute, sir. Kev?
Jeez, I don't know.
Darren, you're not somebody. Nevada?
Nevada's my last team in. So that's the first team out.
Kev?
I'm trying to remember who my last team in was.
Mississippi State?
It'd be Arizona State.
Oh, okay. Arizona State was one of those
teams. I think Arizona State would be.
Okay.
The team Atlantic has done enough. I think
if that's the case, Florida Atlantic to me isn't getting in. I think Florida Atlantic needs to win their tournament to get in. I know I'm against both of you on this. Well, I think they lose their conference tournament, they're not getting in. I know they got 30 wins. I still think they're not getting in.
The only way they don't get it for me is if they lose the first round. If they make it to the semifinal, I put them in. Not even the final.
So, given, and I understand your comments about the quads. They are 5-3 against quad one, quad two. Mm-hmm. They have no bad losses in quads three and four. However the system works, however the computer rankings work, they are 15 in the net. Me, they're safely in already.
I agree with you.
They've done the best that they can, given their schedule.
Okay.
The computer is never going to spit these teams out as well as they do the big schools, and it's almost not fair to the big schools because they have to bang their heads against everybody all night long.
Yeah.
Oklahoma has wins of double digits against Alabama, against Iowa State, against TCU. They've blown out good teams, and they're under 500 because their league is so brutal. Yeah. And we know the coach can coach because Porter Moser did a great job at Loyola Chicago getting that team in. And then that, another mid-level team that if he would have stayed there might have built something, but he got the job at Oklahoma. You can't blame him.
Okay, I got two last points before we close out college basketball for tonight, and that is, one, is there anything you'd like to see happen so that maybe some of these – schools from these mid-major conferences do get a bid? Anything off the top of your head? I know I'm throwing this right at you guys, but
the only thing I would say is that the early season conference, preseason tournaments that go on around the holidays, I'd like to see some of these small schools have a chance to be in them. I'd like to see an opportunity for the Maui Invitational to have one major school that they think could be good in a couple of years. Hard to predict, by the way.
Yeah.
But I mean, you want to see the, you know, because they play in conference tournaments and stuff like that. Not conference tournaments. I'm sorry, preseason tournaments. But a lot of them are against other mid-majors. They're not necessarily getting to play against the high major. So you need to see Toledo get an opportunity to go up against Ohio State in, like, the Buckeye Classic. I'm just making one up. But you know what I mean? Where they have a shot. If they lose it, they lose it. But at least they're getting a chance to play. That's what I'd like to see. And I'm not talking about the low major. I'm not talking about, you know,
the MEAC.
Bailey Dickinson and the MEAC. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the Missouri Valley. I'm talking about the Sun Belt.
Conference USA.
I'm talking about the Mountain West, even to an extent. I'm talking about West Coast. Yeah, West Coast without Gonzaga, by the way. A-10. Yep. I want to see these conferences that are good, you know, get a chance to play. I mean, you look at it, and I bring this team up all the time because I root for them a little bit, but Fordham's 24-7. I mean, they can't even get a sniff. And there's no way to do it. Their net is 133. They beat nobody. I mean, they played Arkansas, lost by 40. That's their best game. Well, they have to win their conference. Yeah, I mean, you know.
If Florida Atlantic wins their conference tournament, the mid-majors made it very easy on the committee because Charleston, Florida Atlantic, and Oral Roberts all would have won and basically secured a spot without any of them being right on the bubble for these tournament selection guys to actually make the decision on it.
I think if they do that, the only top 50 mid-major who's on the outside looking in would be Liberty.
Yeah.
And by the computers, I'm talking.
And they lost their game on a foul call with 0.7 seconds left. I'm just saying, they got knocked out on a weird call. I mean,
yeah.
Not That's saying a good one, Kev. Just didn't need to call it.
That's a good one, Kevin.
It is, because Liberty was a top 40 team in the net, and they got an unlucky call on the road in a true road game where they had probably about 500 fans against the other 3,300 rooting for them in a small gym.
Yep.
It's a big deal. One other college basketball note just to make right now. Jim Boeheim, the way he did his press conference leads me to believe that he is being forced out. He said it's up to the university, and the university said, thank you very much. Adrian Autry is the new coach. So basically, Boeheim is being forced out after all this time. Another legend lost his last game tonight in Patrick Ewing. I have to imagine he won't be back. It's the end of a Big East era. The Big East is it was good to see UConn come back, but the Big East is now not what the conference once was. It's a little sad. Just thoughts, guys. I don't know. Boeheim over. Should have been over a while ago, in my opinion, but over.
I think 5 years ago was the time to get out.
Yeah.
I agree.
As much as I hate Krzyzewski and Duke, Boeheim has that sense of, well, he's had 100 plus wins vacated because of violations, because of sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that just knocks down his legacy just a bit.
I agree.
Second most wins, I think, behind Coach K.
Yep.
But you felt like, yes, they were high and mighty about it. They're like Notre Dame football, Duke basketball. They're very high and mighty about it. But you feel like Duke did it wore the right way under Krzyzewski.
There was never a question about anything. No, you're 100% right.
And I think that's one thing you can say about Boeheim is just a little shady in some spots here and there.
Okay.
Listen, he did a lot. Coaching since 76, played there, the whole thing.
Yep.
Won a title, lost a few others. He was the first guy to get that major upset where he lost to Richmond in that 15-2 game way back when. You know, time we saw that, you know, but yeah. Can never win the big one. Derek Coleman misses the foul shot. Keith Smart hits the shot. He had a bunch of different things that happened, but he perfected a 2-3 zone. And, you know, listen, you know, Carmelo led him to a title.
All right, let's stick with basketball. Let's move to some NBA. Knicks lost, so they're 9-1 in their last 10. The 9-game winning streak is over, but they're still really hot right now. They're getting contributions from everywhere. I mean, it's what you want to see. You know, Brunson, Hart, Quickley, Randall, you know, they're getting it from everywhere. Everybody's contributing. Kev, a little NBA talk.
Yeah, it was a terrible half. The second half against Charlotte was just awful. They've settled into a real nice rotation since the trade. Hart has led the bench squad coming in. But it's funny that Quickly and Hart seem to finish the games a lot more than Grimes and even RJ. I think, and then having Robinson back just gives him that defensive guy in the middle that if he can just stay healthy, just even for those 28 minutes and have Hartenstein play 20, that just gives him some size in the middle, some rebounding. And every night it feels like Robinson puts up, you know, 12 points on 6-for-7 shooting. He is pure garbage points. And that's what this team needs. They've got enough offense. And remember, they lost the other night. They had no Brunson. It was the second straight game without Brunson. They survived the first. They lost the second. In that 9-game winning streak, they also beat Boston twice. And Boston's slumping. But that's two quality wins there in that streak, along with some other big wins as well. They're playing real well, and I think the way they're playing is sustainable. Maybe not 9 out of 10, but, you know, definitely sustainable to give you hope that maybe they can get into the second round of the playoffs.
Possible. They get that 5 seed. They wind up playing Cleveland first round. I could see them winning, you know, 7 game. I could see it.
Yep.
Darren?
Well, last night was a very interesting game. I mean, again, tough loss to Charlotte. They played well for a half, and, you know, they kind of fell off. And interviewing a couple of players after the game, Randall came out. I'm about to say Josh Hart, but Randall came out. You know, listen, we didn't play well. We didn't execute down the stretch. I think we're a little tired. Hart came out and said this. We get paid to play a game. The guy that wakes up at 6 in the morning to work a 12-hour shift, he's the guy that's tired. If we're tired for playing basketball 3 times a week, there's something wrong. If I didn't love Josh Hart before, I love him now. No excuse for the fatigue. I know it's night back-to-back. I know all the stuff that they went with. Simple fact of the matter is Charlotte out-executed them in the fourth quarter, and that's why they lost. This team with quickly carried them in that Boston game.
Absolutely.
They did. Yeah,
he was
38.
Amazing in that game. And he's not as good as Brunson, but he's damn good. I mean, you know, the team has a lot of talent. I said it like last week. R.J. Barrett can't shoot. When he does shoot well, the team has an X factor that's beyond. But when he's out there just taking bad shots and missing by a ton, it's like I know why he's not finishing games because Tibbs is afraid he's going to just shoot the team out of it because he'll put up 29 shots to score 21 points. And it's that kind of game. But I really, you know, really impressed with the move for Hart, which wasn't as big as some of the other moves made, is a nice key move of a glue guy. And they sometimes don't get the credit they deserve. These glue guys, you know, Michael Cooper from those, you know, those Laker teams when we were kids, you know, and sometimes you need that glue guy that can get things done. The Knicks are impressive right now, and they have a shot at catching Cleveland. I'm not saying they're going to, but they do have a shot to catch them.
They're only 2 back or so. So
yeah, right there.
Maybe some other NBA news, Kev.
Yeah. John Morant. Social media is awful. Unless you're following the Sports Kings from Queens on social media, then you're allowed to.
Oh, but yeah.
These athletes, these celebrities, everybody else, what the hell are you doing on social media? This Instagram Live or something that he was in a nightclub and possibly having a handgun. Now, the authorities came out. They announced today there was not enough evidence to charge him with anything, so he's cleared from any wrongdoing that way. He's away from the team, though, for at least the next 4 games. Memphis wants to push him aside for a little bit. What are you doing? You've got the world in the palm of your hand. You're a rising star. People like you. People love to see you play. What are you doing brandishing a gun, allegedly, in a nightclub and then showing it on Instagram Live? Can people have a brain? Can people have a little brain?
It's embarrassing. You know, whoever's around these guys, giving them the protection, giving them the advice, you know, listen, enough of this stuff. What he's done is he's dropped Memphis. Now they're basically in a tie with Sacramento. I think they have a half game lead on them, or they're up a game. Okay. But, you know, what they did was kind of ridiculous. What he did, I should say, is kind of ridiculous. You cost your team seven games without you. What are you doing? You're the best player on the team. You just hurt your team because you had to show a gun off? You're a moron. Moron.
Right. Anyway. Right now, they're tied for second with Sack.
Okay.
And they're both 7.5 behind Denver.
Yeah, no one's catching Jokic. Jokic, no. Whatever it is. Who they like to call a stat patter. They say that he's did you guys know what happened with Giannis this
Giannis.
Week? All right, yep. Go ahead, Kev, since you know it. Go ahead, give the story.
Yeah, Giannis had, you know, big points, had over 10 assists, had 9 rebounds late. And he did the old coming down with a couple seconds left, counting down 5-4-3. He puts one off the rim to get the rebound, to get the 10th rebound, and get his triple-double. The NBA stats after the game said, reviewed it and said, no, you're not getting credit for that rebound. You're at 9.
Not the spirit of the rule. I love it. I love it.
He the rebound has to be made on a shot that is an attempt to score.
It was ridiculous.
Not what he did.
No. Do you have anything else in the NBA?
Yeah. Lakers retired Pau Gasol's number.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a here's your medal type of retirement?
There's one thing very cool about it, and I'll tell you about that after it's done, but go ahead.
He played about 6 or 7 years for the Lakers, key contributor to 2 championships. Did he get this because he was Kobe's best friend on the team?
Of course.
To me, number retirements are supposed to be for the best players in your franchise. And Pau Gasol is probably about the 20th best player at best on the Lakers. I don't understand the retirement there.
Well, here's the cool thing about that night. That happened last night. Pau, during his speech, you know, hinted toward Kobe, and the crowd erupted in a Kobe chant. This is what will never happen with this generation of NBA player that has no loyalty to the jersey. This is what will not happen to LeBron in L.A. This is what will not happen to a lot of players, Durant. Guys that are superstars, but they move around because I want to play with my friend and I want to do this and I want to do that. Kobe was a Laker, and that crowd knew it, and we all know it, and that's why that generation of players is far more revered than this generation will ever be, because the guys stayed, and they wanted to be part of something special, and when things were down, they wanted to build back around them. They didn't ask to leave. And the fact that arena erupted in a Kobe chant during the Pau Gasol, retirement tells you, A, that it was for Kobe, and B, it's just something that LeBron will never get. Maybe he will get that in Cleveland. I can't see it because he left twice. I can't see them loving him. Like, I know he brought him a title, but,
but it won't be the Rockets.
It won't be the same type of thing because there's – bunch of guys that burned those jerseys over time. And that's why the LeBron era of the NBA, the me first era of the NBA, has made it tough for the average fan to really enjoy it to a certain extent, because the Knicks team is fun because they're coming together as a young team together. And it's kind of cool to watch, and, you know, you kind of enjoy it, and you know who's going to, you know, be around. But these guys that all have to play with my best friend or I'm not playing has really kind of ruined the game in a lot of ways. Plus the days off. I mean, they got to fix this thing.
Yeah.
You can't play 65 days, you know, play 82.
Like Clark said, we play 3 games a week.
It's 3 games a week, for Christ's sake.
How are you tired?
Play 3 damn games a week.
That is probably the biggest issue that the NBA has to address, that they have to fix, because you got these guys going to cities and they don't want to play, and all the fans, that's all they wanted to do was they paid, you know, $800 to see somebody, and he's not there. Kev, top 5.
Well, I just have a couple more points, NBA, real quick. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Nets back on track, won 3 in a row. Bridges had another good night last night. They included one with a win in Boston that didn't get the same excitement that the Knicks win did, but the Nets had an easier win. Steph returned, and they lost to the Lakers, who seemed to be playing better the last couple games without one LeBron James. The Suns-Mavs game was real good. Kev, sorry.
Golden State, I was shocked. 7-25 on the road.
Awful.
I mean, that's among the worst league's worst records on the road.
That's a team that doesn't make the playoffs generally. The Suns came back to beat the Mavs in a really good game on Sunday, actually. That game was back and forth, but Durant beat Kyrie, and it doesn't still look like Dallas has been able to figure out the Kyrie Doncic thing just yet. Denver and Milwaukee continue to win. Boston dropped three in a row till tonight. They beat Portland tonight to get off that slide. And that's really all I wanted to add. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Kev.
Nope, no problem. Number one, Milwaukee. They have their 16-game winning streak snap since we've talked last week, but they've won the last two. They are 22 in their last 22 games, just playing unbelievable basketball. Number two, Denver, winning four in a row. You take a look, and you know everybody talks about Jokic averaging the triple-double, front runner possibly for the MVP. You go back. I went back to New Year's Day just for the start, since the start of the new year. They were also getting contributions. Jamal Murray, Michael Porter, Aaron Gordon. These guys are leading the team in scoring also night after night. It's not just Jokic carrying this team. Mm-hmm. They have four or five guys that they can count on. Any one of them can step up on a given night. So they've got the depth, and they are running away with this Western Conference up by 7.5. Number three, I did keep Boston at three just because of the season-long dominance. Like I said, they won tonight. Before that, their last three losses, Cleveland, Knicks, and Nets. Not exactly losing to the dregs of the league.
Two so you give them
that at least.
Hmm? Two of them were in overtime.
Yep. Four got Philly. They seem to have righted themselves a little bit. They've won three in a row here. And number five, I did keep them there, even though they lost last night. Nine-game winning streak to me counts for something. I have the Knicks at number five. Not saying they're the fifth-best team, but right now they are playing well enough. They got number five. Right on the outside, I've got Sacramento and Phoenix battling out for 6 and 7 right now. Darren?
Okay. Same five. I have Cleveland, Phoenix, and Sac as my three teams on the outside. Same five, same exact order.
Okay.
I have the same four. My five is Phoenix.
Yep.
You mentioned it last week. You gave us a prelude, G.
We mentioned it. And listen, it was the truth. We mentioned it last week, and I told you, I think they can enter my top five, but I got to see a couple of games out of Durant healthy. Durant and Booker are going to be tough to beat. If these guys stay healthy, Durant Booker is going to be a tough duo to have to beat in the playoffs, man. They get anything from Ayton, they get anything from Chris Paul. This team is going to be really hard to beat. And I know they're going to have to go through Denver at some point, but really tough to beat. Kev?
Well, Durant's first home game tonight. Slipped during the pregames. Rolled the ankle out tonight. Who knows how long the injury is. Talk about staying healthy.
Yeah.
Always a frail guy.
Yep.
All right. We'll move to NHL.
Sure.
You guys want to talk about anything?
Just that McDavid's the most ridiculous player I've seen in a long time.
Who is?
McDavid, he's just ridiculous. He's got 54 goals. He's just unbelievable. All three local teams playing well, and McDavid's probably the most ridiculous player I've seen in forever. I'll leave it there.
already career high 54 goals, a career high 124 points. He leads Dreisaitl by 28 points in the scoring lead. If he's not a unanimous MVP, I don't know what is. The most ridiculous player on the other side of the coin, D'Angelo. That spearing last night on Corey Perry there. I mean, well after the play, comes up, butt end of the stick, or the blade end of the stick, right into where no man wants to get hit. He's been in two games. He's always been a dirty, cheap, chippy player. I given his history, I think he probably should have had more than two.
I agree with you.
But you mentioned the locals, the Devils. Just consistent.
They did blow one last night. They had a lead in the third and blew it. I was surprised.
Yeah. But they're 6-3-1 in their last 10. It feels like they're always just right in that 6 or 7 wins in the last 10 consistently. They've been playing real well. They had that little stretch in December where they lost a few and fell off, but they've been playing real well. And they are still 23-4-4 on the road. The Rangers. Okay. Rangers have cooled off a bit. In their last 8 games, they are 2-5-1 in their last 8. And the problem has been the goaltending, believe it or not. If you take a look, since the All-Star break, Shesterkin. In the 9 games he's played, he's given up 31 goals. That's a 3.44 goals against average. And his save percentage is down to 868 since the All-Star break. They need him to turn it back on. Shesterkin is too good to be playing like this. I don't know how much is on him struggling. I don't know how much is on the defense not playing well. Darren Jean, I don't know if you guys have seen more. I don't really watch the Rangers as an Islander fan. But
I mean, the thing is, the Rangers have been in most of the games. I mean, you know, goaltending in this sport, you know, you have those weeks where you're a little bit up and down, a little bit bad. And Shesterkin hasn't been Shesterkin over the last week and a half, 2 weeks. But I think the Rangers are going to be just fine. The Islanders, suddenly they're looking up and they're saying, wow, we can catch the Rangers. They had a must-win last night against the Sabres because that's a team that has games in hand on them. And they beat him in regulation, which was very important last night.
Yeah, that was one of the bigger wins for the Islanders. They're 6-2-2 in the last 10, consistently getting points in their games. They are first in the wild card, and you look behind them. They've played the most games. They've got teams behind them with games in hand, but nobody can pass them who's behind them except for Pittsburgh, just on games in hand. So it gives you a little bit of cushion now. They've got a big game Thursday night at Pittsburgh. That's a big game. They're home for Washington Saturday. Then the big West Coast road trip. They've got 3 games at L.A., at Anaheim, at San Jose. They're lucky that they get Anaheim, San Jose, 2 of the worst teams. To me, they really need, at worst, 1-1-1 on the trip, preferably 2-1-1.
Yeah, I think
that would put them in real good shape.
Yeah, I agree.
Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I got to mention the Boston Bruins right now. They are 49-8-5, and the thing that is starting to really I'm starting to see as the season goes on is that they're on a 10 game win streak. I mean, you normally see teams start hot, get hot, maybe not so hot, that then they try to turn it back on. This is a team that's been hot since the start of the season. And then here we are, 50-something games in, and they got a 10-game win streak again. Yeah. I mean, it's 49-8-5. I mean, they've lost 8 games all year. It's just they're on fire. It's something to see. I caught a little bit of their game the other night. They are so good. Oh, my God. They are playing so well right now. They're skating. They're hitting. They're moving the puck. It's something beautiful to see, I got to tell you.
And tomorrow night, Boston-Edmonton, best player versus best team. Make it a little bit interesting to see. I hate everything there is to hate about Edmonton, but I don't like any Boston teams either. But at the same time, what you said is right. That the amazing part is the Devils have a better road record than Boston, which is shocking, right? But Boston is just, I mean, to pull off a 10-game win streak like they have going right now, it's unreal. And you know what? I just think it's really kind of it's a special team this year. I don't think we've seen a team this good in forever, and it's kind of really awesome to watch right now.
Darren, 10 games ago they were 39-8-5, and now
they're so ridiculous. Yeah,
it's so ridiculous, and now they're 49. Kev, top 5.
Shockingly, I've got Boston 1.
Yep, me too. By the way,
Boston 1.
Carolina 2, Devils 3. I think they've been pretty consistently between 2 and 3 most of the year. Toronto 4. Tampa Bay's falling off. They had a 5-game losing streak. They broke it last night to drop out. So me, the West, you're starting to get some teams starting to play real well. I put the Canes there at my 5. They've won 4 in a row. Seattle Kraken have won 5 in a row. Minnesota's 8-0-2 in the last 10. Vegas is 6-2-2 in the last 10. Starting to see some West teams finally start to play real well. Out of those teams, like I said, I've got the Canes there as my 5.
Yeah. The funny thing about it is that the Pacific has been playing well, but the other Western division, I can't think of the name of it, is struggling. Like Minnesota, Dallas, Winnipeg, they're all struggling. But the teams in the Pacific are playing real well right now.
The Norris division.
Not my team, but everybody else's.
The Norris division.
I got the same top 4. I got Vegas coming in at 5 right now. Darren?
I have LA at 4, actually. And I have Toronto at 5, same top 3. Yeah. LA's win streak. I put Seattle just off at six.
Okay. Not a lot of baseball news this week. A couple of injury notes, but nothing big. Montas says he's not coming back. Don't even include me in some trade rumors because I won't be back by the All-Star game. And then Jose Quintana. Darren?
Broke a rib. Or somehow, something with his rib. I don't know. I don't know what these guys do in these warm-ups or whatever it is. But, you know, listen, I'm not saying Jose Quintana was the ace of the staff by any stretch. But, Kev, you were mildly excited about it when you got him just because he was going to give you that left-hander that you knew could pitch, could give you some innings. I mean, it's a blow. And you never know. And when you hurt yourself in the ribs, you just don't know when he's going to heal. You don't know if he's ever going to be able to pitch successfully all year, if he's going to push it too soon. It always makes you nervous with this stuff.
Just make sure he's fully healthy before. Don't rush him back. If it takes him till Memorial Day, let him go to Memorial Day before getting him back. That's why it was a good thing that they hung on to Carrasco. You got Peterson and McGill as your fifth starter now, battling it out. You feel like you still have a chance to still pitch well enough in that five hole to definitely overcome this injury. It's not Verlander, it's not Scherzer.
And when
Quintana's ready to come back, you're gonna be a little bit more into the meat of the season. And no one's saying he's coming over from Japan where they pitch once a week. No one's Scherzer and Verlander a little older. Quintana might be that sixth starter for a little while too. I think the Mets go six man staff for at least a portion of the year.
I agree.
I think that's the key point, and that is the injury is to your five starter, not to your number two starter. You'll deal with getting around the fifth starter. Begin the season, you may not even need him the first couple of weeks. You get back into the season gets going, you start moving a couple of guys around. You got two guys competing for that five, and then you'll see how the season starts rolling. So.
And they're two guys that you know are at worst five starters in the league.
Exactly. Been 6 days since the last time since we've been back. We've watched about 87 college basketball games in 6 days. Did you get a chance? Either one of you get a chance to watch an inning of spring training?
I did.
And
a little quicker than I like. A little fast. I might get used to it. I'm not there yet. But I didn't hate it. It was just a little quick.
It is fast.
All right. Max Scherzer. And I love what he's doing. Testing the boundaries. I mean, this is a veteran who's understanding what he's trying to do in spring training. My daughter's a big Mets fan. He got roughed up. I said, no, he's trying different things out. So one of the things was he takes a little time. Batter calls time. Batter gets reset. Scherzer, while the batter's out of the batter's box, gets a sign. He comes set. The batter looks up. Scherzer throws a pitch. Now they're calling quick pitch, balk. What's your fucking decision? Either you speed up the game and the pitcher pitches when he's ready, or get rid of this damn pitch clock.
Hey, listen, don't get into the pitch clock issues. This is not a pitch clock problem. This is a pitch clock problem. No, it's not. This is a problem. Listen. If Scherzer wants to screw around with the intention of the rules, that's fine. Let him do it in spring training now, and then they'll straighten his ass out before the season starts. Don't give me crap about the pitch clock. The pitch clock is working fine for every other pitcher in the league except him. Why does he got to be the
it's
one?
It's working fine for every other pitcher.
Huh?
We haven't seen enough yet, G. Nobody's pitching in a big spot. We got to see what happens in a big spot because right now it's spring training. Nobody cares if they get lit up.
Then he also had another point where he wound it down. He was trying to figure out, is it 3-2-1 ball or is it 3-2-1-0 ball? You know, like that. Is it like the NFL, the play clock where it hits zero, you get that split second? You know, and I'm glad he's working on this now. I mean, that's the type of guy Scherzer is, but it's
he's being a ball buster. Let's be honest. But you know what? But that's what the rule kind of came into place, and now he has the opportunity to be a ball buster. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Any other baseball points, Darren?
Just a question for both of you. What are your thoughts on Judge in left field?
Better, better than the center field.
I mean,
I
do you it, think it, is it going to help Stanton to be in the field every day? Is it going to keep his focus better? I don't know. If it does, then I like it. But I'm just curious what you guys think.
I still don't want to see Stanton out there too often if I'm a Yankee fan.
Of course you don't. See, he hits better when he plays in the field, though. That's the one thing I'll say about him.
I want to see Stanton out there as much as he wants to be out there. And if he thinks he needs to play three times a week in the field, then play Judge in left, play him in right, and just get it going. Because whatever it takes, so that Stanton feels comfortable enough that he's fine. And if it means playing him in right field three games a week, play him in right field three games a week. Judge played center field last year for a number of games. Judge played right field enough. I'm sure he can handle left field if he needs to in Yankee Stadium. I know they talk about that left field in Yankee Stadium is a problem to play. But you know what? If that's what it takes to get Stanton comfortable out there so that he's hitting the ball like a monster, then just do it.
Nope, I got you.
Yep.
Just curious of your take, that's all.
Yeah. Any other baseball?
Anybody excited for a little baseball classic?
No.
Okay. No.
Not at all.
It's one. If the Dutch do well, I'll be very excited. They won today against Cuba. I was glued to it. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. NFL talk. We had some signings. We had some franchise taggings. Carr signs with the Saints. Geno Smith signs back with the Seattle Seahawks. Daniel Jones signs with the Giants. We'll get back to that in a second. Franchise tags. Giants use theirs on Barkley. Dallas used theirs on Pollard. The Raiders used theirs on Jacobs. Washington used his on Darren Payne. Jacksonville used it on Evan Ingram. And Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. And the other news that came out this week was the whole Jet hierarchy was flying to go meet Aaron Rodgers in California. Thoughts on the Daniel Jones signing, Darren?
Had to be done. The thing is that if they didn't sign him, they were going to have to franchise him. And all of a sudden, now you're losing Barkley most likely because he becomes a free agent. And if you lose Barkley, Barkley was your offense. No matter how much you might love Daniel Jones or not like Daniel, whatever it is, Barkley was the reason why the Giants offense went. They had not a lot of weapons. He had a lot of rushing touchdowns. He caught a lot of passes out of the backfield. I think that the Giants did exactly what they had to do. Now they're negotiating with Barkley for a long-term deal so they can get that cap number down because they need to get a receiver for Daniel Jones. Listen, Daniel Jones, we're going to find out if he's really good or if last year was just a really good year where he got confident. I have a tendency to believe he's going to be good. I don't think he's going to be great, but I think he'll be good. But the salaries for quarterbacks are out of control. But the Giants kept it where it's only 4 years. So if they really feel like it, they can move on from him probably after 2 to 3. And I know it's two, but you know, but at the same time, you never know if they give him that third year to see. But I'd be stunned if they didn't. But you know, we'll see what happens. Kev?
Yes, they had to do it. It's 4 for $160, $82 million guaranteed. So you know he's got the 2 years. He's had 3 straight years now with less touchdown passes than games played. That's not elite quarterbacking. For how crappy the Jet quarterbacks were last year, Jet quarterbacks combined for 14 touchdown passes. Daniel Jones had 15. I know they had to do it, but $40 million a year is quite the overpay for Daniel Jones.
So I don't think he's that good. I think he's probably the 13th or 14th best quarterback in the NFL. But as a gentleman at work discussed with me, if they didn't sign him, what were they going to do?
Right.
Okay. So either you were franchise tagging him and then you were going to get hit. He was going to cost you big money. And then you most likely either you don't sign him year two or you franchise tag him again and then he costs you an absurd amount of money, or you let him go and then you got to go find a quarterback. And as the other New York team is finding out, the Jets, these quarterbacks came off the board really quickly. Carr is gone. Kev, is Aaron Jones the answer? Is he the Aaron Rodgers the answer?
He better be.
He damn well is the answer, by the way.
Yeah.
Question two is, if he's not the answer, where are you guys going?
Either you make the big move for Lamar Jackson, who I'm afraid of because of the injuries the last 2 years, or Jimmy G, who's a little bit less money, but you're afraid of the injuries his whole career.
Okay.
Fact is, you're probably looking at Tannehill and Mayfield as guys that you're looking at as well. That's where it comes down to.
Probably weird, Tannehill's – at least he plays every game.
No, I mean, the thing about it is the Jets become relevant with Aaron Rodgers. They do.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the Jets are a team – will we get like 5 primetime games because Aaron Rodgers is our quarterback? We will.
Yes.
Are the Jets better? Did the Jets win 3 more games this year if Rodgers is quarterbacking rather than Zach Wilson or Mike White?
Easy.
Probably 5.
Yeah.
You know what? The thing is that are we a Super Bowl team? You know, you can't say that. We're a team that haven't made the playoffs in 13 years. But we become relevant. We become competitive as long as the injuries don't crush us. Aaron Rodgers plays, guys. He plays. He played had a bad thumb all year last year, but he plays. I think that we have a better than 50-50 shot of getting him right now, and I like that. I like the odds.
He had a bad year, thumb injury, new wide receivers. He still threw 26 touchdown passes.
Yep.
Exactly. We haven't had a quarterback do that since
exactly.
Ryan Fitzpatrick's magical year.
Yep, exactly.
No, yeah, I agree. Think
that, I'm sorry, G. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I mean, they have a better than 50-50 chance of getting him. They have to do everything they can to get him. Listen, if he doesn't come here, you know, Lamar Jackson got tagged, but he got tagged where every team can negotiate and make an offer to him, right? He didn't get the exclusive tag. He got the non-exclusive tag, right?
Yeah.
Not one team has come out there and went after him with the money he's looking for. Not one team's offering him what Deshaun got. Simple fact is that we have a running quarterback that's been hurt 2 years in a row that is not a painfully accurate passer. I know everybody thinks the world of him. I'm not giving up 2 first-round picks for Lamar Jackson. I know a lot of people love him. How many playoff wins does he have? I mean, you know, on a pretty good team. He's got 1, you know? I mean, that's it. I mean, he hasn't done it. And it's more of an indictment. I mean, the fact that Cleveland went crazy for, a molester or a rapist, so to speak, in Deshaun, and nobody's giving an opportunity to Lamar Jackson is just an indictment on where this kid's at, you know, just saying. And the NFL is going to start getting hot and heavy in the next couple of weeks, so we'll start seeing a lot of dominoes fall. Free agency starts next, what, Wednesday?
Yeah.
The 15th, well, I think. Middle of the year, right?
Yep. Next Wednesday, yep. They can start to talk to them, and then no one can sign until next Friday, the 17th.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay, anything else?
Couple quick things. Golf. The Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer this weekend. It's always fun when there's like 5 holes to go and the leaderboard has 8 people within one hole, within one stroke, and you have guys like Rory and Spieth and Hovland and Cantlay and Hatton and Scheffler and all these great players. And the guy that wins it is Kurt Kitayama, who had never won a tournament on the PGA Tour, made more money for that he had in his entire career leading up to it. And you know what? They had pulled even with him, and he found a way to pull it out. Really great putt on 18. They gave him the tap in to win it. Just fun golf. I can't wait for the players this week. And I'm really looking forward to the Masters. I know Tiger's not playing. And when Tiger doesn't play, I do get a little disappointed. I'd be lying to say I don't. But I'm hoping that he's healthy for the Masters because I can't wait to watch it. Kev?
Well, it's interesting this week. Cameron Smith is the defending champion of the players. He will not be there.
Oh, he's on the live.
He's on the live. You mentioned some of the names. You know, the big names have struggled there. TPC Sawgrass is a challenging course, and it takes a certain playing style, I think, to do that well. John Rahm has only 1 top 10 in 5 starts. Shoffley's missed 3 straight cuts. Morikawa's best is tied for 41st. Spieth has been outside the top 40 in his last 7 times there. Cantlay's 3 missed cuts in his last 3. So some of the top guys really struggle. Some of the guys who've done well, Rory won in 2019 and 3 other top 10s. Thomas won in 2021. Names, other names to watch. I think Zalatoris. He always seems to rise up in the majors. And this is a tournament that he can win. Palma's won two times already this season, and he was 13th last year. So he's proven he can play on this course. He's a name to watch. Shane Lowry, the Irishman, back-to-back top 15s at Sawgrass.
And he eats a lot. We like that.
And drinks a lot, it looks like.
Absolutely.
And talk about a non-winner so far on the tour, one to watch, I think. Tommy Fleetwood. He's got, like I said, no PGA wins, but he's got two top 10s at TPC Sawgrass. If there's a guy who break through this week, I think he's a guy that can break through and win his first PGA Tour event.
Okay.
I like your analysis on it. I think it makes sense. I didn't do the research that you did on the guys that missed, but I like the guys that you like. Homa usually plays great in California and struggles when he goes back east, but you know what? He did have a good tournament last year here, so I like Max Homa. I like the way he's playing.
Yep.
The only other topic I wanted to touch was a little bit of horse racing, just because we had three great prep races last week. Forte, by the way, if he's not a 2-1 favorite for the Derby by now, I don't know how he's going to be. In the Fountain of Youth, I mean, the first quarter was in 24 and change. He wasn't on the lead. He was stalking. And he just won for fun. He wasn't even hit. He's just a strong horse. He went off at 1-2, and he just pulled away. Very impressive. In the San Felipe, Practical Move made a real practical move, actually. He was also stalking. And Hijazi faded and, faded to like fifth or something like that. Practical Move had a really nice win in that race. In the Gotham, more of an upset, Ray's Kane won it over Slip Mahoney. We really didn't have any great horses, but a lot of horses don't want to run at Aqueduct anymore. And for this year, unfortunately, for a stretch, they're making it where they're trying to weatherproof Belmont. So Belmont will be closed for the entire year. So the Belmont Stakes will not be at the Belmont this year. It'll be an Aqueduct in hopes of having it where they never have to go back to Aqueduct again after this year for anything. And they'll get more of a crowd at Belmont. So we'll be interesting to see. But, listen, we have a real clear Kentucky Derby favorite right now in Forte. I'll be stunned if he doesn't go off as a legit favorite in that race. That's basically all I got.
Okay.
D, anything?
No. I look forward to our Sunday night show.
We will be doing a college basketball March Madness tournament bracket breakdown for you guys on Sunday. And what we're going to do on next week's show is also do a joint bracket. So we'll do majority wins, and we're going to see how we do against the field, so to speak. So we got a lot going on. Kev, any other points before we wrap up?
Nope.
All right, guys. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren. I'm here with Gino. I'm here with Kevin talking about the wonderful world of sports, which we hope is the same escape for you that it is for us. If you haven't been watching these college basketball games, check them out because there's some really good things going on right now. Beside that, you can download our podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you like to get your stuff. We will be posting more and more stuff on Facebook. We'll be posting it throughout the tournament. We'll be making nightly picks on certain games during certain times of the tournament. Doing the same thing about golf. We'll try to keep you guys updated on everything we're doing through social. But really, we want feedback from you guys. As Gino said in the beginning of the show, ask us questions, give us picks, tell us why we're stupid, give us everything that we're looking for. But we want your opinions. We want to know what we should be talking about more. In the near future, we'll be doing a baseball preview show and a fantasy baseball preview show as well. We have a lot of things lined up for you. The guys are exhausted already just thinking about it, but we're going to try to come up with stuff to talk about. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.